You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior cycle and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier. Welcome back to the Cyclix podcast. We have another special edition of the Cyclix podcast. We're hoping to do more of these where it's me, Nessa, who's usually on the Cyclix podcast with my sister Emer, but we've invited a teacher on, an expert in their subject, to talk about how exactly to do well, what little kind of tips and tricks, how to make the most out of the subject, how to basically improve your grades. So today I have on with me Jamie Dockery, who is an English teacher. He wrote a junior cert English guide. As we know, like, the syllabus in English for junior cycle was recently updated, or there's a new syllabus. So he wrote a guide for us on Study Clicks, and then he's basically, this podcast is going to be just like an audio version of this guide, and he's going to give us his tips. So Jamie, welcome to the Study Clicks podcast.
Nessa, how are things? It's lovely to talk to you.
It's great, absolutely. It's lovely to have company, isn't it? It's lovely someone to talk to.
indeed.
So Jamie, just I had Linda on last week to do home ec, and the first question I asked her, I'll ask her the same of you as well, just to tell us a bit about yourself and your background and your history with English as a teacher.
Sure, absolutely. I'm a proud Roscommon man. I graduated with a Liberal BA in English and History from Mary Immaculate College, University of Limerick, in 2008, which feels like a long time ago now. I'm getting old, I think.
It'll seem long to the people who's listening, but it's not that.
Yeah, your God, I see some of them weren't even born, which is a little depressing. I went on then and did a master's in modern English literature in Mary I as well, and qualified as a teacher from Trinity College in 2010. So I started my teaching career in St. Nathie's College in Balhadrin, and I spent 10 very, very happy years there with some great students and great people. And I'm delighted to say that since September of last year, I've been part of Tyndall College, Carlow. So I've moved to the southeast, and very, 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 very happy to be working as well with Study Clicks for the past couple of years, working on content for you guys for the Leaving Cert and Junior Cert English and History. Really love English, and you know, I suppose that as a teacher, I would hope that if I could instill even a little bit of my passion to my students, that would be what I would consider a job well done.
I find that, especially with like English and history teachers, like, you think that, like, obviously all teachers have a bit of a vocation, but like especially English, you know, there's a big passion there for, or like wanting to inspire the creativity in the students and having that same love yourself for the subject. But that's brilliant. So I'll kind of get into the bones of the podcast then. So this is specifically Junior Cert English, how to do well in it. I think a good place to start is just in how the subject is assessed. Can you make kind of just break up like the overall grade in your Junior Cert cycle? How is it made up?
So, yeah. So I suppose the first thing to note is, and we can get into more detail maybe later on these, the first thing from the student's point of view that they might be concerned about will be these classroom-based assessments. So your two CBAs that some students will be used to now at this stage, but you've got your oral presentation in second year, your collection of texts, which sounds very important and official, in third year. But I suppose the main thrust of the grade comes from the final exam that you'll do in June, which is 90% of your overall grade. Before that, you'll have a little assessment task based on your second CBA, which is 10% of the overall grade. So then in terms of the way that it'll look, I guess, in terms of its reporting, you know, you will get a junior cycle profile of achievement, which will outline how you did in your two CBAs, and then also a what do we call it, a grade indicator in your exam. So whether that's a distinction or a higher merit, etc.
Perfect. Yeah. So yeah, it's different from your H1s and your H2s and all that. So can we get into maybe a bit more detail about the CBAs? I suppose like they've been here for a while now, so students kind of know if you're in second year or third year, you've one done already. But what does CBA 1 and CBA 2 involve?
Yeah, now they sound scary. And I think when they were introduced a couple of years ago, even ourselves as teachers were a little bit unsure about them, but actually they've been something that have really, really added to the classroom atmosphere and to the subject as well. So CBA 1, so classroom-based assessment 1, is your oral presentation, and which again sounds very important, very fancy. All it is where you're speaking for anything that you want. So to talk or present on anything that you want for about 3 minutes. And you will, you know, do that in front of the class and with your teacher. That'll be usually recorded. But you'll get a couple of weeks in the run up to that to choose your topic, to practice it, to write up. A lot of students like to do PowerPoint presentations or to do something a little bit different with it, make a speech, for example. You'll have time to practice that and prepare it with your teacher before you actually have to deliver it then in front of the class or a group of students. So that's your CBA 1. Your CBA 2 then is, if you can imagine that throughout the 3 years of your junior cycle course, you'll be writing an awful lot of things. So whether it's diary entries, short talks, writing short stories, personal essays, all the things that you write should really be collected together. And then sometime in third year, you'll present your two or three best pieces, whatever you think are best examples of your work, to your teacher. And then so generally what happens then with the classroom-based assessments, your teachers, and if you're lucky enough to have a large English department in your school, those teachers will get together and I guess decide on the grade indicator for that, whether your work is in line with expectations or whether it's something that's really, really exceptional. And the teachers will decide on that based on the criteria that they've been given and based on the other work that they have in front of them.
Okay, brilliant. And then with CBA 2, like you mentioned earlier, there's an assessment task that's then part of your overall grade, is it?
It is indeed, yes. Yeah. So what usually, now it's with the way that things have been over the last couple of years, this has kind of been not something that has embedded in the classroom just yet, but there is what we call an assessment task. So what you'll do is you'll fill out a little booklet during class time that will make reference to and use some of the material that you've handed up as part of your collection of texts. Now, again, sounds very scary, but it's very, very nice and very straightforward. So usually what they give is, for example, some what they call stimuli or just stuff that you have to watch or read. And it'll usually be people talking about how they write. So it could be famous writers or students talking about how they come up with their ideas, how they put their writing together. And then you're asked to reflect on that. You'll also pick an example of some of your work. You'll write, let's say, for example, a paragraph into your booklet and discuss how you put that piece together. So maybe where your ideas for this piece came from, what you changed from your first to your second draft, what features you think make it a good piece of writing. And that's something that sounds a lot more scary than it actually is. By the time you get to, and this will be, much, much later in third year, usually around Easter-ish time in third year, you'll do this. And by that stage, you'll be very, very comfortable with the idea of discussing your work. So it's nothing to be afraid of. That gets sent off, that little booklet, it gets sent off along with your exam that you'll do in June. And that'll be graded by the State Examinations Commission along with your actual junior cycle exam. So that's where that extra 10% comes from.
Perfect. And do you have any little tips on how to just approach the CBAs, or do you know how to get the best grade indicator that you can?
Yeah, so the big thing for CBA 1, which is your oral presentation, would be prepare as well as you can. You do have a block of 2 weeks that'll be given over to it. And as a teacher, I can always tell the students that took the time, thought very carefully about the topic that they wanted to choose, those who go and practice it, is what I'd say. So you have your text for something that you want to say, go and practice it at home, be it in front of the mirror or to whoever you have at home, maybe practice it in class to the person that sits beside you. Definitely go through that. Maybe even record yourself on your phone or your iPad or whatever and watch yourself back and see, was I making eye contact with my audience? Was I speaking clearly enough? And actually, as I speak to you now, Nessa, I'm going through this in my head. Am I actually doing these things as well? Practicing the actual speaking out loud, because it is a scary idea of having to stand up and speak in front of your classmates. So try and get yourself used to that idea. Mm. In terms of CBA 2, the collection of texts, what I would say is absolutely draft and redraft your work. So what I mean by that is don't just hand up your first version of, let's say, a diary entry. Bring it to your teacher. Ask them, you know, what can I do to make this better? And they'll be delighted to tell you, take your teacher's feedback, put it into action. And remember, it's your teacher who's going to be looking at this piece of work along with their colleagues to come up with your grade indicator. So whatever they tell you to do in terms of your second draft or your third draft, go ahead and do that and get into the practice of trying to improve your work. And it's the students who, I guess, take these CBAs seriously. They're the ones who'll get the really, really good grade indicators, the above expectations or the exceptional. And, it, you know, how nice would it be to see on your junior cycle profile of achievement, you know, those above expectations, those exceptional sentences for your grade indicators?
Yeah, that's brilliant. CBA 1 in particular sounds like something that would have been very useful to me if I had done it, like in college. Like, I think with the new junior cert cycle, they're thinking of, like, these are actual skills that you're going to be using later. And I know some students might get frustrated, like, oh, it's not going towards like my final grade or my indicator. But like, these are all skills you need after school. And it's always a good thing to work on them. It's
you're
never
dead,
a waste
you're
of
dead
time.
Right, Nessa, because my feeling would be, you know, not every student that I will have in front of me in the classroom is going to always love poetry, for example, as much as I will. But every student and every person at some stage in their lives is probably going to have to make some sort of speech or talk. It could be in a sporting context. It could be at a wedding, something like that, family event. Everyone at some stage is going to have to speak in front of a group of people. So if this is something we could practice in school, I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a great thing they brought in. Like I said, I wish they brought it in sooner. It could have helped me a little bit, get the practice in early. I'll move on from the CBA. So actually, something I wanted to say earlier on, but I suppose it ties into the CBAs as well, is that, well, the purposes of this podcast is that it's the Junior Cert English Guide, and it can be listened to whatever you're doing the junior cycle, whether that's, you know, 2023 or beyond. But there are adjustments in the 2023 exams. Chances are, if you're listening to this and you're doing the junior cycle and that, you're just to be aware that there are changes, and that we'll link the adjustments in the bio, but there's not a huge amount. But then moving on then, I suppose, the next question I had on my list was just tips for English as a subject in general, because English, it's very different to a subject like biology or you know, history, where there's like dates to learn off or parts to learn off. It's a kind of an unstudiable subject. So what are your tips for studying it in that way? And I'm using quotation marks now because for the listener.
So yeah, I guess sometimes students just have an idea in their heads, you're either good at English or you're not. Mm. And I would respectfully disagree with that. There are certain things that a student can do to improve their grades when it comes to the studying of English. The first thing I would say is that, okay, you're going to be doing an awful lot of different texts. So be it, for example, your novel, your play, or some poems. And one thing that you could certainly do and revise and study are those texts. So the idea of being familiar with those texts that you do in class. So for example, you know about the key moments. So know about I'll use a novel as an example, know how it begins, know how it ends. And then whether there are any important moments in the middle somewhere that affect the plot or tell you more about the characters, you should definitely be familiar with those things. Another thing that you should be able to do in terms of the studying of English would be to use adjectives to describe characters that you come across in your texts. So an adjective being a descriptive word, how would you describe them? In terms of your poetry, poetic devices, all day long till the cows come home, you need to be comfortable and familiar with your poetic devices. And that is something that you can absolutely go on and revise and study. And then the last and probably the key piece of advice I would give, more so probably for third years, would be to practice answering exam questions from your exam papers. Usually teachers will tell you to get exam papers around the start of third year. If they don't, go and get them yourself, and definitely go through practicing questions from the exam papers. Why not give them to your teacher to correct? I'm sure they would be delighted to help you in that regard as well.
That's great. That's something you touched on there, which is another question I wanted to ask you, is there's a lot of students that probably feel like they don't have a natural ability at English, that like some people are better than others. And like you said there, you don't necessarily agree. And I think I'd be the same. Like if you practice enough at something, you can get good at it. But that was basically my question. Like, what are your tips for those students who don't feel like they have that natural flair when it comes to English and maybe creative writing?
Yeah, I suppose the first thing really is, in particularly for students who maybe feel that they struggle with writing, is, and I don't want to give our listeners a kind of a cop out answer, but the advice I would give is to actually start writing. even if you're thinking in your own head, you know, that you're not happy with what you're writing, or you think it's silly or daft, or whatever, just get it down on the page, because that's the first way that you can make a move towards improving your writing. Absolutely get feedback from your teacher. Read whatever you've written out loud, even just to yourself, but better again to people at home, and see if they understand the story that you're trying to tell. If I was to give one piece of advice to any of my students, and this would be to a first year on their first day, or a higher level Leaving Cert student on their last day, my advice to improve your ability in the subject of English is to read. Now, ideally, yeah, novels, brilliant. That's what we want. But really anything, whatever you're into, whether it's, you know, sports reports in the paper, music reviews, magazines, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is you're into, find a book, find a magazine and read it. Students who tell me that they don't like reading, I always, and I know it's a really teacher answer, but I've always just tell them, you just haven't found the right book yet. Reading and books are your way into this subject. If you're a student who maybe struggles with reading and any particular specific aspect of that, for example, students maybe with dyslexia and things like that, audiobooks are your best friend as well. And I can't recommend audiobooks enough as well. I use them myself. I use them in class. They're really, really helpful for students as well. And By reading and listening to audiobooks, that's going to help your language and your expression, absolutely, but also your ideas for stories, that when it's put up to you in an exam, you know, to come up with ideas, that you'll have a bank of stuff that maybe you wouldn't even realize it at the time, but you can pull an idea out from something that you've read or heard already.
That's brilliant. That's something that sometimes students ask me for tips on, how can I maybe do it if they're wanting to study over the break, but or over the summer when there's not much going on. English is a great subject that you can do prepare for over the summer, because reading is just a general fun hobby that you can do. And like you said, there's so many genres and different media formats that you consume. As just as long as you're consuming words and sentences, you're improving your English.
Absolutely.
And something that I recommend as well for people to get into writing is there's just journaling every day, or like just a little bit, just writing about your life is very fun, because I talk about this on the podcast a bit because it's one of my hobbies, and it's just, even if you just write a little bit every day, it's very fun to look back on, and that's all contributing to your English ability.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's one of my tips anyway. And there's a thing you can get like in bookshops like Easton's and things called a line a day diary, which is close to zero commitment. You just have to write one sentence every day, and that could be your kind of a starting point for maybe kind of getting it into writing a bit more. But that's something I've recommended in the past. I think it's great.
Might try that myself.
there's lots of ways of like improving your English, so don't, like you said, don't dismiss yourself as and your ability. Like, there's lots of ways to improve. Yeah, so that kind of tied into another question I had, which was like, what are your tips for improving your English outside the classroom? And that's basically it. Like, there's so many different ways to read and write outside of your learning. Is there anything else you could add to that? Or
I would just hammer home absolutely the reading, the audiobooks, and the, you know, and I loved your idea there of the journaling, and maybe I suppose having fun with the subject as well, because, you know, look, I know we're here to talk about the junior cycle exam and all of that, but really I got into teaching to try and make students fall in love with the subject. So, you know, absolutely find ways of having fun with English, because it's such a lovely subject, and I always feel like if a student has that love of reading, they're never really alone when you have a book, and there's always something there for you. You know, any emotion that you've ever experienced, you'll find it in a book. If you can't put words on it, you know, how you're feeling at a particular moment, whether you're feeling, you know, ecstatically happy or under pressure or stressed, and you can't put words on it, there is a writer out there who can, and you know, maybe they'll help you in those ways as well. So it's a really, really lovely subject to have a passion for.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That made me think as well, actually, when it comes to around exam time, and when everyone comes out of junior cyclical English or leaving cert English, it's one of like the first exams. And it's always the most crack to talk about, because people like just talk about the absolutely mad thing they wrote about in their essay, or this like ridiculous article that they all had to write up on. Like, you don't get that crack with like history, because it's all the same, you know. There's something different with English every year, and like you said, it gets people can be as creative as they want. Like, the examiners are just seeing different things, and it's just an enjoyable subject. So yeah, like you said, have a bit of fun with it. I'm trying to come back to, I have a list of questions here and I keep losing my place in them, but oh yeah, so I had kind of, my tips were outside of the classroom, but then I also had a question about, do you have any tips for making the most of in classroom learning? Like, how can you get the most out of being in the class with your teacher and benefiting from that? How do you engage?
That's a really good question, and I'm going to give maybe a very teachery answer, and you know, I'd appreciate that. Look, it's very, very hard sometimes. You know, you will be tired and it could be last class on a Friday, but you know, my advice here is I guess aspirational. You know, if you could do this even in most of your classes, you know, you're onto a winner. I suppose the first thing that I would say is to don't ever be afraid to, you know, always take notes, even if it's not, you know, if you're a student who really, really wants to reach your potential in this subject. Sometimes, yeah, we'll do some note taking in class, but oftentimes we're discussing something. Don't be afraid to take a note of something. If something strikes you that you might want to come back to, or you heard the teacher say something that you think was, you know, worth remembering, take a quick note of it down somewhere. That would be the first thing, to take as many notes as possible. I always remember I was lucky to have some brilliant teachers in the Mars College in Athlone, where I went to school as a student. And sometimes, so we would do a poem, for example. And I remember when Mr. Kinnan, my English teacher, would go through the poem, I would understand it perfectly, and I would be wrapped up in this poem, and then but I wouldn't take any notes. And then I'd come home and I'd have questions to answer, an essay to answer on it, and all the good stuff that my teacher had said and all the brilliant knowledge he had given me was gone. And I'd then be trying to go through the poem line by line, go, what did he say this was, and what did he say this was, because I hadn't taken the notes down on the poem. So that would be the one thing that I would certainly say, is you can't take enough notes. Even the things that you understand at the time, do try and write it down, because again, remember, you have so many subjects and everything that things can pop out of your head if you don't write them down. So as many notes as possible. I would also say as well, don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't understand something in class, or you want to get clarification on something, don't be afraid to put your hand up and ask a question. If you're maybe a naturally shy person, maybe, you know, a lot of schools now use things like Microsoft Teams or other platforms where there is an avenue there for you to ask your teacher a question about something. So definitely make use of that. If you have again, you have a lot of texts to get through in junior cycle English. You know, you have a play, you have a novel, etc. If you're lucky enough to have your own copy of your class novel or your class play, have it in your bag. You know, if you get a free class, or you've a free moment in school, don't be afraid to take it out and have a read of it. You know, because the more times you read through a text, the better you're going to understand it, and the better you're going to remember it, so that you can, you know, take out better examples in an exam. And the last thing I'd say, and it's again, it's going to be so teachery, but do your homework. And it really does matter. You know, I'm sure I can speak for all my teaching brothers and sisters when I say that we don't give homework just because we want to rob you of your evenings, or because we want to punish you or torture you. The homework is used as a way to kind of, you know, reinforce what we've done in the classroom, and for us to check as well how well you've understood something. So do get into the habit of doing homework and taking your time with it and doing well. And I do promise you that, that will, you know, make the subject a much easier for you.
That's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. That's something I probably didn't appreciate enough in school, and it's saying it now, like, homework is part of studying. It's part of preparing you for exams. They all have the same end goal. So yeah, just try not to have a kind of a negative attitude straight away going into homework, because it's all supposed to benefit you in the long run.
And don't be afraid as well. If what I try to do in my own classes, and I know many teachers do this as well, we'll try and start the homework in the last 10 or 15 minutes of class, because what that means then is, you know, you have, as a student, have a chance to maybe ask a question that if you didn't understand something, or you're not sure what exactly a particular question is asking you to do, that you have that chance to ask the teacher in class. So definitely make use of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one thing, and myself and Emer are talking about this on the podcast we recorded recently, about things we regretted about the time we were in school. And obviously, look, it's very easy to look back on now as, like, we're out of school and we're like, oh, we wish we, like, spoke up more in class and engaged more in class. And that could be hard when you're a teenager as well. You don't want to be seen to be the one who cares, like, oh, it's so, like, oh, you actually want to do well in school. Like, you think everyone cares, but most of the time they probably don't, and it's definitely will work out for you in the long run if you just ask the questions, if you have them. Don't be afraid, like you said, the whole with the wonders of working on Teams and Google Classroom now as well. If you're that bit shy and you wouldn't usually do that, you kind of, those avenues are available to you now. So what a wonderful age we live in.
exactly.
This one is more of a practical one, and I was just curious to know if you had any tips. But when English, coming back to the stuff that you can study, something that you do have to learn off are quotes from, like, your novels and your plays and poems and all that. Do you have any tips when it comes to memorizing quotes?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing I would say is that, and I know that often students get very, very worried about quotes, and I do, I suppose, find myself often saying, you know, you must quote and quote this and quote that in class. What I will say is, if you're someone who is really, really worried about memorizing quotes, the first thing I'd say is that, look, they're not the end all and be all. Okay. And you can also make reference to things that happen in the novel or the play, not just, you know, the exact word for word quotes from the text. But look, if you're someone who finds learning things off by heart easy, brilliant, fantastic. But again, remember, if you over rely on quotes in an answer, you know, that's going to hurt you as well, because you should be using your own words, and then the quotes from the text just back up what you said. So that's the first thing I would say. But absolutely, do try and learn them. So what advice would I give to do that? I guess what I used to do as a student was I would practice writing them out. So, you know, try and learn a quote, then close the book, try and write them out on a piece of paper. Even if you were to rip that paper up and put it into the bin again, that's really, really good practice. I'm a big, big fan of visual aids. You know, putting particular quotes on a poster, putting that somewhere where you'll see it, be it inside your school locker or on your desk at home. And the more... you know, the more full of imagery, the more color you can put on these visual aids, these posters, the better it's going to be, and the easier it's going to be for you to remember. I remember hearing somewhere or reading somewhere, some study, I can't remember where, but that the mind finds it very difficult to memorize, you know, the two colors of black on white or blue on white, that, you know, that if you're just reading something from a book. But if you can make your own notes, whether colorful and visual, and you're making a little bit of artwork around it, and you don't have to be a Picasso to do this, it's going to help you to make it easier to learn those quotes. So color is everything.
Yeah, that's, yeah, the visual aids are a big one, especially if that's you know, how you learn as well. A lot of visual learners out there. That's brilliant. So I said I would come on to the written exam then. So this is the one you sit in June. It's worth 90%, like you said. Can you talk us through like the exam layout and, you know, the marking scheme of that? Like where, what can students be aware of, what they're being marked on and what to focus on, you know, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, so this is the big one, really. We want to do as well as we can on our CBAs, but when it comes to the actual exam itself, it's 90% of your whole grade for English, and it's in one sitting. So we've got a 2-hour exam in June, and that's broken up. You've got your higher level and your ordinary level, and it's just one paper, okay? And you've got 180 marks altogether, and there usually be some sort of theme. So one common idea through all the exam were the different pieces of the exam that they've been inspired by. So I'm trying to remember, I think it was Hope maybe was last year's one. You know, the theme of Hope and all the different, be it a poetry or an extract from novels, etc., were inspired by that theme. Now, the thing with the new junior cycle is this. I can't tell you what's coming up on it because I don't know. Back in the day, I was able to tell you there'll definitely be a question on your novel. There'll definitely be a question on a poem. This, that, and the other. What they've done now with the junior cycle, which makes it slightly trickier for students to prepare for, but makes it a much more rounded and better exam, is that they're much more concerned now with a student reading and engaging with texts. Now, when I say texts, that could be anything. That could be text. It could be a photograph, a poster, a cartoon. But we don't exactly know what is going to come up on the exam. So we know that there'll be some sort of comprehending and responding to texts. So what I would say to you is this, and that all sounds very, very scary, but it's really, really not. So when we do a poem in class now, you may or may not get the opportunity to discuss that poem in the exam. But what we're actually doing is we're learning skills. We're not learning off answers on a specific poem. We're learning how do we approach a poem? How do we find the poetic devices? How do we talk about the poetic devices? So that when it comes to an exam, the hope is that it doesn't matter what poem they give you, that you're so used to discussing poems and looking at poems and writing about poems that it won't throw you. So that's and I'm not trying to give a wishy-washy answer and essay. It's the exam is quite an open book, so to speak. We know that there'll be what the big wigs in the department call stimuli, so stuff that you'll respond to, but where the guidance comes for the student from is inside the first page of your exam. So it'll tell you inside the first page of your exam booklet how many questions you'll have, what topics they'll be on, and how long to spend on each topic, and what marks are going for each topic. And that would be the guideline that the student will have as they approach that exam. There'll be nothing on the exam that you won't have covered in some way, shape, or form in class, but the specific things that'll come up, we don't have a way of knowing, and we just try to prepare ourselves for any eventuality.
Okay, wow, so it's a surprise on the day.
I suppose it is, not to sound negative, you could well spend your time studying, for example, Romeo and Juliet or The Merchant of Venice, but then you don't always get an opportunity to write about that play. But what we're hoping, again, is as the teacher, what I'm really doing is I'm teaching you the skills of working with plays. So that that you'll have those skills that will transfer into whatever they give you on the exam. So that's why I suppose practicing your exam papers, being comfortable with your texts, and knowing how to discuss, I suppose knowing what makes a piece of writing good and bad, they're the things that are really, and your poetic devices, of course, they're the things that are really going to help you in this exam. I can hear myself, and I'm making it sound very, very scary, but it's really, really not. It's actually a lovely change that they've made to the exam, because we're getting away now from you know, the learning of the stuff off and the over-reliance and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that, like you said, like, it's not that meant to sound scary. Everything in the exam is something you would have practiced in class. So it's not, you're not going to be thrown on the day, basically. It's just, it's more to focus on your actual skills and your ability.
And they've actually as well changed how the marks are reported. So they're a lot more generous in terms of the different bands of marks and what, you know, that what it'll say on your certificate of achievement as well.
Okay, very good. So one of my last questions, the second last question, was going to be, when it comes to the written exam itself, what are your do's and don'ts?
Yeah, so I suppose in the do column, I'd say absolutely come prepared. Have your pens. I'm a big fan as well of Tippex rollers. Have water and all the things that you're going to need to get yourself through those 2 hours. Because it is a long time, and you're going to be writing for the vast majority of those 2 hours. So do come prepared with that. I remember when I used to do exams, I would be writing quite quickly, and sometimes, you know, some of my letters might not look as clear to somebody who wasn't familiar with my writing. So I used to go over it again when I had time, 5 minutes at the end, with a Tippex roller and just kind of tidy it up a wee bit. Now look, it's not the end all and be all, but it would make things a little bit easier for the examiner. And if you were able to make things a little bit easier for the examiner, you might get some of those 50-50 calls. You know, is this answer 7 or 8 out of 10? That kind of thing. They might be a bit more generous to you. Another thing I would definitely say to do is to, again, really teach your answer, but to read through everything properly, especially that first page. So inside the cover of your exam booklet, it'll tell you exactly the questions, as I mentioned, and the time to spend on each question. Okay. I would also definitely show your examiner that you've thought deeply about your novel, your film, your poems, your play. The more detail you can give in your answers, but also then your personal opinions. Have an opinion. Do you like the character of Romeo, for example? Does he annoy you? Don't be afraid to talk about how you feel. Is there a particular poem that you liked? Why do you like it? What do you like about it? Does it remind you of something else? Really think deeply about the text that you're talking about, and don't be afraid to show the examiner what you know. You know, you've spent 3 years at this, so give as much detail as possible. If there was something to say that you, not to do, I would certainly not spend any more time on a question than is necessary. You know, do look at the marks to see how many marks are going for something. If you're spending more time on a 5-marker question than you are on a 20-marker question, you know, you're doing something wrong there. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes you have all the marks that you're going to get on a particular question. So make sure you move on, because there is a lot to do in that exam.
Brilliant. So that's everything to do with the exam. My final question was just going to be, do you have any final tips or anything that you want to, like you said, reinforce that you said how important it is?
Well, I suppose, at the risk of ending on a very cheesy note, what I would always tell my students when it comes to this subject or any subject, you just want to be able to look yourself in the mirror and know that you did your best. That's it. That's all that anyone at home is asking for. That's all that we as your teachers are asking for. After that, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And don't worry about having any postmortems or worry about what you did say or didn't say. Once you know that you gave it your best and you worked as hard as you could, if you get a C or a B or an A or a D, it doesn't matter. If that's your best, you can be proud of yourself and well done.
That's so lovely. I'm going to ask all my guests to end on a cheesy note. That was such a nice note to end it on. So yeah, that's all my questions that I had for you. And just, I want to say thank you so much again for giving up your time to do this. I think those are absolutely great tips, and they're definitely going to help the second or first, second, third years listening. There could be fifth or sixth years listening too. I think it kind of applies to English kind of as a subject as a whole across secondary school. But those are absolutely brilliant tips. Thank you so much. And just some kind of information for the listener with regards to other resources is that stuff that you've worked on is on StudyClick. So we'll have the guide, basically the written version of this podcast. I'll link that in the podcast notes if you're interested in reading back over it. And of course, we have loads of resources that Jamie's worked on that will be under Junior Cert English, the videos and notes page on StudyClicks. So definitely use that. There's a lot of it is completely free, so use what you can. But just a general podcast bit of housekeeping that we always say is that if you enjoy this or you found it helpful, rate and review, give it 5 stars on Spotify. It helps us become more visible, and share it with a friend, someone in your class you think it might find it helpful. I think that's everything from my side. So Jamie, thank you so much. I'll let you say goodbye, unless you have anything you want to plug yourself. You're working on a TV show, or it feels weird to end the podcast. They always like that. Like, do you have anything to plug?
No, not at all. Had you asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have mentioned that I'm playing the role of Ned in Philadelphia, Here I Come by Brian Friel, which was on in Kilkenny, the Watergate Theatre in Kilkenny, a couple of weeks ago with Barnstone Theatre Company. But apart from that, I have my regular Thursday night slot in the Carlo Academy on Tolla Street, where we do some grinds in English, and also history, if people are looking for that too. You can find them on Instagram and all the other social media outlets. That's generally me, and then just focusing now on the Christmas exams and the mocks and all the rest of it. But Nessa, thanks very much for having me. I had a great time. I hope I didn't. I tend to speak rather quickly when I'm excited about a topic, so I hope that the students didn't find me too quick. But I wanted to wish the very best of luck to everyone as well with the Christmas exams. Not the date this edition, but also the mocks that are coming up in a little while. But more importantly, I suppose for the exams in the summer. And there's loads of great stuff there on StudyClicks in all the different subjects. So please do make use of it.
That's brilliant. That's the perfect note to end it on. So we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks again to you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.